Well, hello and welcome, or should I say, salam alaikum to the Archaeology News. Yes, I am, of course, your host, David Connolly. I am so sorry for the break. Well, sort of sorry, because Maggie and myself had actually just headed off to the World Archaeology Conference in Jordan on the Dead Sea. It was amazing. My head is still spinning. Just to give you an idea, I mean, I was dealing with things like the amazing discussion about aspects, limitations, possibilities of interpretations of the detailed composition of rock art. What about that? We've also got quite remarkable stuff about Sami rock art as well up in Finland. There was an amazing discussions about the Epipaleolithic and the Neolithic and whether or not we can actually even say that homes are homes and villages are villages. It just went on and on. There were over 70 countries and over 1,000 delegates, well hosted by Jordan. Thank you very much to them, and well done to them at WAC7 as well. Anyway, they're deciding they're going to head off to Kyoto for the next one, WAC8. I think that's in 2017, so get saving. I just cannot wait myself. And of course I got to head down to Petra once again and have a look around one of my favourite countries in the world. Anyway, that's enough gushing from me. You're here for the news. And of course, this news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources with Past Horizons as well. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view the details in each story, including that all-important source, well, you'll just have to go to the Stone Pages website and have a look at news.stonepages.com. Well, what have we got? Well, we've actually got quite a lot since I've been away. We've got an ancient Chinese arrowhead found in Japan. Sounds exciting? You wait. There's a campaign to save the Iron Age fort up in Scotland. And prehistoric headless skeleton unearthed in Cambridgeshire. It seems that the Indians broke Australia's isolation 4,000 years ago, long before any Europeans got there. And it turns out that war was central to Europe's first civilization. Who was that first civilization? Well, you'll just have to stay around and find out. We've got shaman stones discovered in Panama and baby bones found in an Italian village. There's Neolithic remains, they've been discovered in Istanbul, and in Western India they've just discovered a new prehistoric rock art site. There's a stone circle found underneath a church, no, I kid you not, in northern England, and storms have exposed Iron Age skeletons in the Shetlands up in the far north of Scotland. A Neolithic floor surface has been uncovered in Cyprus, and Vietnamese caves seem to have been occupied for over 11,000 years. Good old Mesolithic man, he gets a sort of a name change. Should he be hunter-gatherer farmer? This is exactly the sort of debate that we're actually talking about at WAC. And the modern paleo diet, not as good as the original, I can tell you. And in fact, after the fabulous food that we had in Jordan, I'll be on the paleo diet myself. So, where do we start? Some intriguing news, as archaeologists confirm an ancient Chinese arrowhead unearthed in Okayama City in western Japan, and find that it's the first of its kind ever discovered in the country. The bronze arrowhead has been dated to the Warring States period of the ancient Chinese history, and that's about 475 BCE to 221 BCE for the rest of us. And the researchers say that the Chinese artifact, a double-winged bronze arrowhead, was unearthed at Minamigata, located in the city centre of Okayama. I'm going to have to be practicing my Japanese, actually, for the WAC8 conference. So I've got 4 years to get there. Anyway, back to the news. The arrowhead, 1.4 inches long and half an inch wide, was found together with pottery and stoneware dated to Japan's Iron Age Middle Yayoi period. That's around 300 BC to 100 BCE. The double-winged shape of the arrowhead represents a distinctive manufacturing style from China, which suggests it was imported into Western Japan. Considering the time gap between its original production in China and then its final deposition in Japan, the bronze arrowhead must have been used as a, wait for it, ritual item, rather than a weapon. Makes sense to me. It's like an unusual item that somebody's sort of gone, oh, that's quite, how you say, unusual. I'll keep that. Now, campaigners are renewing their long-running appeal to stop an ancient Iron Age hill fort from being quarried away in Scotland. Dumbarton residents, green activists and archaeologists are aiming to halt the approval of a review of minerals permission when they fear, which they fear could lead to the destruction of the historical Sheep Hill, which is in West Dumbartonshire. That's in sort of southwest Scotland. The campaigners, who have a petition signed by 1,500 people, are aiming to raise the profile of Save Sheep Hill campaign and are canvassing residents for their support. Quarriers William Thompson and Son were granted permission to quarry the site back in 1949, but they've had to submit a new application to bring their planning conditions up to date. The approval would offer the company the possibility of expanding operations into this historic site, or should I say prehistoric site. The site has been described as being of great archaeological importance. There were at one time numerous cup and ring marked stones around the land, and they've been removed to safety several years ago. But there's a hope that if Sheep Hill can be preserved, the rock carvings themselves could be restored to their original positions, and this piece of prehistoric heritage preserved for future generations. Well, we can only hope. But if you want to get involved, then I suggest that you type in Save Sheep Hill Campaign and see what you can do to preserve this site. Now, I always like a story like this. Headless skeletons. Archaeologists have unearthed a decapitated human remain found beneath a former allotment in Cambridgeshire. It wasn't a murder, fortunately. Well, at least not a recent one. Experts from Hereford-based firm Archaeological Solutions are currently excavating a Roman settlement of land around Fordham Road before 96 homes are built on the site. Among the wealth of artefacts found are a number of human burials, thought to predate the Roman settlement, including one where the person has been decapitated before being put in the ground. I must admit, I've excavated a few of these not too long ago as well. Andrew Peachy, a specialist in prehistoric and Roman pottery at the company, said that prior to the Roman settlement, the margins of the Fen and island of Ely were heavily exploited by prehistoric settlers, including one who appears to have been decapitated before being placed in a crouched burial in a circular pit. Of course, the reasons for decapitation are purely theoretical at this stage. One is obviously execution. The other is to prevent ghosts. Quite often, the head is found somewhere else on the site, but so far there've been no sign of it. This throws up, of course, more questions about where exactly the head was taken to. Was it placed on a spike outside? Who knows what's going on? The dig is expected to continue until the end of this month, so perhaps they might come up with a clue. Now heading to the other side of the world, where genetic analysis of more than 300 Australians, Indians and people from Papua New Guinea, as well as islands of Southeast Asia, has found a significant gene flow from India to Australia about 4,230 years ago. This is a report by researchers at the Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Anthropology in Leipzig, Germany. Irina Pugash, the study's lead researcher, states that there was a sudden change in plant processing and stone tool technologies, with microliths appearing for the first time, and the first appearance of the dingo in the fossil record. It's likely that these changes were related to this migration. The study also found a common origin between Aboriginal Australians, New Guinea populations, and a group from the Philippines. The researchers estimate these groups split from each other around 36,000 years ago when Australia and New Guinea formed one land mass. Outside of Africa, Aboriginal Australians are the oldest continuous population in the world. Australia offers some of the earliest archaeological evidence for the presence of humans outside Africa, with sites dating back at least 45,000 years. And in fact, if you get yourself along to the Past Horizons magazine online, www.pasthorizonspr.com, you mean you're not there already? You'll actually be able to read a very exciting new piece of evidence for this puzzle. Now, researchers from the University of Sheffield, that's in the UK, shows that the ancient Minoan civilization, I was going to tell you who that civilization was, it was the Minoans. The ancient Minoan civilization of Crete had strong martial traditions, contradicting the commonly held view that they were a lovely, peace-loving people. The research carried out by Dr. Barry Malloy of the University Department of Archaeology investigated the Bronze Age people of Crete, who created the very first complex urban civilization in Europe. Malloy's research reveals that war was in fact a defining characteristic of their society, and that warrior identity was one of the dominant expressions of male identity. Even the famous warlike Mycenaeans, these are the Greek heroes of the Trojan War, took up the Minoan ways, adopting their weaponry, their practices, and their war ideologies. In fact, says Malloy, it is to Crete that we have to look for the origins of the weapons that were to dominate Europe until the Middle Ages. Things like the sword, the metal battle axe, the shield and the spear, possibly even armour too. There are a few spheres of interaction in Crete that did not have a martial component, right down to the very symbols that were used in their written scripts. That is a fascinating story, and again, you'll find more about that on Past Horizons PR. Ruth Dickow from the University of Exeter in England has unearthed 12 unusual stones in the back of a small prehistoric rock shelter near the town of Boquete in 2007. This is in Panama. The cache represents the earliest material evidence of shamanistic practices in Lower Central America. Charcoal found underneath the cache was dated at 4,800 years ago, above the cache at 4,000 years ago. This places, of course, the cache between these two dates. The fact that the stones were found in a tight pile also suggests that they were probably deposited inside a bag or a basket, which is subsequently decomposed. They consist of, now, are you ready for the list? A small dacite stone fashioned into a cylinder, a small flake of white translucent quartz, a piece of bladed quartz, a jarosite aggregate, a quartz crystal aggregate, several pyrite nodules that show evidence of use, a small abraded piece of chalcedony, a magnetic andesite flake, a large chalcedony vein stone, and a small magnetic kaolinite stone naturally eroded into an unusual shape. I feel I should actually ask you the question, can you now repeat all the types of stones that were found? That's cruel. Let's keep going. Anthony Renner from Temple University in Philadelphia, that's in the USA, first identified and excavated the site in the early 1970s, finding it had been repeatedly occupied over thousands of years and used for a variety of activities. Dickow's group also found and discovered it had been occupied more than 9,000 years ago. The people practiced small-scale farming of maize, manioc and arrowroot, collected palm nuts, tree fruits, wild tubers, and probably hunted and fished. But it is this find of the shaman stones that's really caught the imagination. Now, an interesting, if not controversial, one from Italy, about 25 kilometres from Siena in Tuscany. The settlement of Poggia Civitae dates back to at least the late 8th century BCE. Archaeologists excavating the site have found evidence of a lavish residential structure, as well as a 52-metre-long open-air pavilion used as a workshop. Now, in 1983, scientists uncovered a cache of bones on the workshop floor, consisting mainly of pig, goat and sheep remains, but it did include two fragments of arm bone from an infant who died around birth. In 2009, a portion of the pelvis of a newborn baby also was uncovered. Anthony Tuck, who's an archaeologist from the University of Massachusetts, suggests that the bones were either simply left on the floor of the workshop or ended up in an area with a concentration of discarded butchered bones. The discovery of discarded infant bones in the area used for work, he suggests, says that the people who laboured in the workshop had little social status. Now, in 1971, archaeologists found the arm bones from another newborn or near-term fetus pushed up against the wall of the residence, along with other bone debris. The interpretation, however, has been questioned by Katie Myers, who suggests several other plausible explanations that do not involve the sensationalised concept of throwing the babies out with the rubbish. You'll be able to read a lot more about this on both Katie Myers' own blog and via Past Horizons. It's an interesting debate about interpretation and sensationalisation. is the way to get the public's imagination captured to come up with stories like this? Is archaeology too dull to actually report the facts as they are? And the facts are that we have three infant bones. That's it, I'm afraid. Right, from fiction or fact to Istanbul. Absolutely no connection whatsoever. A team of Turkish archaeologists have unearthed traces of a Neolithic settlement dating back over 8 millennia in Pendik district in Istanbul. The site was uncovered during the construction of a railway project along Istanbul's Marmara. The finds include houses, cemeteries and artefacts such as spoons and axes. Interesting combination there if you're trying to eat, I suppose. That indicates a history of 8,500-year-old settlement at this site. Most of the skeletal remains were buried in a fetal position. There was also thousands of mussel shells discovered in the area, suggesting that the residents, wait for it, consumed large amounts of mussels. Rock art now in Western India. A prehistoric rock art site has been discovered at Kapikuna in India. The petroglyphs bear a close resemblance to those on the walls of the Edakkal caves in the Abukuthi hills in the same region. Four images have been identified. We have two deer facing each other and a further three images, abstract ones, engraved upon the huge lump of rock. The petroglyphs probably date back to the Neolithic period. Gira Gratier, a researcher from Belgium who was there as part of a research project on the tribesmen of southern India, visited the site after she was told of it by local people. And she was the one that suggested the early date. A recent exploration of the area by the State Archaeology Department yielded yet another rock art site, as well as more artefacts which give us another Neolithic date based upon the stylistic depiction of the figures. Again, at the World Archaeology Conference, we were struck by the Indian contributors, just the amount of archaeology that is being uncovered right now on the subcontinent. Now, one story which I have to confess took me aback. Not in a bad way. In fact, it took me aback to a job that I did back in the 1980s, again in northern England, where we were excavating beneath a church. And the church was basically a lovely medieval site, which actually sat on top of a Saxon church, which sat on top of a Roman site, which sat on top of an Iron Age site, which sat on top of a Bronze Age mound, which eventually went actually all the way back to the Neolithic. But one thing we didn't have was this. Archaeologists working at a historic church in northeast England have discovered evidence that the site may have been used for worship since at least the Neolithic. St. Michael and All Angels Church in Houghton Spring has been found to be sitting on the site of a stone circle. Suggesting it has been actually created in the Neolithic. Parts of the current church actually date back to the 12th century, but new finds have beginning to emerge since work began on the church in 2008 to make it more accessible. First, an Anglo-Saxon doorway and walls were discovered, but then earlier stonework appeared, which archaeologists believe are in fact the remains of a Roman temple buried beneath the church chancel. And then they started discovering whinstone boulders in a rough circle. This actually suggests the site goes back 4,000 years. The site was originally built upon a mound in the midst of boggy land, which would leave it the most visible site for miles around. Church warden David Turnbull, an official guide to the church, said, and I like this bit, "When I take school children round the church, I ask them, how old is Jesus? And they say, he's 2,000 years old. I then say, well, worship on this site could have taken place 2,000 years before him. The church is special. It's got a very spiritual feel to it," he says. Well, let's hope they've not unlocked any bizarre pagan curses as well. Archaeologists said a structure, we're now heading up to Scotland, was briefly exposed at Chanawick in Shetland before being buried again by a rockfall over the festive period. Before it disappeared from view, police officers and archaeologists were able to investigate the site and take a bone sample for radiocarbon dating. Shetland Amenity Trust archaeologist Chris Dyer said that the skeleton, initially reported by a local resident, looked as if it was contemporary with the Iron Age remains that were exposed as well. The original burial now lies under several tons of fallen bank and stone, and the Iron Age structures have also now disappeared from view. County archaeologist Val Turner added that during the investigation, she and freelance colleague Samantha Dennis discovered evidence of at least one, if not two, other burials. Turner said that the Force 10 gales that lashed the coast had damaged many archaeological sites along the entire east coast of Shetland. In South Nesting, as much as a metre had been lost of an Iron Age site at Gletness. She says that they were fortunate to have a record of these sites as a result of earlier work, but coastal erosion is now becoming an ever-present feature of archaeology in Shetland, and in fact, around the world. Heading to Cyprus now, a floor surface from the Neolithic era has been uncovered in the Hagia Varvara site in Cyprus. The floor was exposed for the first time in, fact, 10,000 years, according to Carol McCartney, who leads the team of researchers from the University of Cyprus and Cornell University, as well as, of course, the University of Toronto. The new finds during the latest excavations has redefined the understanding of the kind of human occupation that existed at the Neolithic site in Nicosia district, which has been radiocarbon dated to between 8,800 to 8,600 BCE. The excavations took place in November 2012 and were run by Dr. Carol McCartney. The floor exhibited a dished form raised above the central area, providing a rough bench that ran along the circumference of the interior wall. The floor is made of trampled mud, refreshed by erosional washed sediments that appear to have collected during short-term, perhaps seasonal, abandonment events. As seen in the northern side of the feature, ash heaps and stone tools were stratified in a sequence of repeated use events. The presence of buried artefacts, usable but abandoned, and the evidence of erosional episodes indicate the punctuated character of the structure's occupation, while the nature of the artefacts demonstrated the domestic character of the building. Constructional features illustrated the significant degree of investment given to the building, including the deeply dished form of the building dug into the bedrock and a 10 to 15 centimetre thick wall lining. The latter exhibited significant evidence of burning and was likely constructed of an organic superstructure of branches cemented in place by mud plaster. The find suggests a decline in the investment applied to the construction of shelters utilised at the site and a shift towards a more temporary architectural form during the final and later phases of occupation. A large, carefully engraved, teardrop-shaped picrolite pendant, representing a more developed form of ornament than those previously recovered, was also found. Renewed excavation in another area of the site uncovered a unique arrangement of chalk slabs encircling a large hearth-like setting of burnt stones. The site could have been used for tanning of animal, specifically pig skins, as multicoloured pigments including red, yellow, orange, purple and grey ochre, as well as bright greens, were also found. That's now an interesting site. I'm going to actually have to look at that a lot more in depth. Vietnamese caves, anyone? Yes, please. Well, I just happen to have a story here for you. Recent excavations in the Vietnamese central province of Tan Ho have revealed evidence of occupation of a particular cave known as Con Mung over a continuous period from 18,000 BCE to 7,000 BCE. And it's believed to be the longest continuously occupied cave in the whole of Southeast Asia. The cave is located on a cliff and penetrates over 40 metres into the heart of the mountain. The sediment lining the cave has been excavated to a depth of 3.6 metres and revealed artefact after artefact from the Paleolithic period all the way through to the Neolithic. These artefacts include skeletons from the Paleolithic as well as a well-preserved tomb. The discovery is of such importance that the director of the Than Ho Department of Culture has requested the Vietnamese government name it a special national relic and are also seeking UNESCO World Heritage status for it. Now that is an important site. Talking of important sites, let's head on back to Britain, where recent research by University of Reading Department of Archaeology, has cast some doubt on the long-held belief that Mesolithic man was solely a hunter-gatherer. The evidence to fuel these doubts has been discovered at a dig near Newport in Wales on the banks of the Severn Estuary. Evidence has been found of fires to encourage plant growth and nutshells dating back over 7,500 years. The head of the department, Professor Martin Bell, is quoted as saying, "Combining our finds with trees, pollen and insects from the area, we can build a picture of the environmental relationship of the Mesolithic hunter-gatherers and find out that these people were highly adaptable and continued using the same site as they environmentally changed the site from woodland to reed swamp and then on to salt marsh before it then returns to a fen woodland." It's not the only significant find on the site, however. Stone Age footprints trails have been uncovered, including those of children, which is an incredibly rare record. They appear in the sand and then disappear again. It's absolutely remarkable. All of this, however, could be under threat by the proposed Severn Tidal Barrage and would have the effect of maintaining high water levels in the area with devastating consequences. The tidal range would be reduced and sites permanently submerged. Sedimentation would increase and patterns of erosion would change. Some sites, including the ones with exceptional preservation of organic artifacts, will just disappear forever. It's been a long-held belief that Stone Age hunter-gatherers, we're back to them again, from the Paleolithic and Mesolithic, had a carbohydrate-free diet. The belief was based upon this assumption that there was no access to the rice and processed foods like bread and pasta. This had led to the emergence of a modern dietary fad known as the paleo diet. Now a lecturer from Copenhagen in Denmark has cast doubt on this assumption. Sabine Karg believes that the Paleolithic man was not so fussy about his food. What would happen if a so-called hunter-gatherer failed to make a kill and had a hungry family to feed? Well, he'd be forced to find whatever sustenance was available, and so turned to harvesting wild grasses, aquatic plants, root vegetables and the like, which have all have been readily available at the time. Evidence of all these types of carbohydrate-based food sources have been found in old settlements of the period, either in the burned area of fires or in the settlements which were subsequently flooded, preserving organic material. But did Stone Age man suffer as a consequence? Well, evidently not, as the carbohydrates he ate did not contain the teeth-rotting sugars that we do consume today. Sabine Karg is quoted as saying the advantage with the starch sources they had, like root vegetables, is that it's a coarse food, which actually helps to clean the teeth. So if we truly want to pursue a paleo diet, then get chewing on those grasses. Well, on that dietary note, let's remember, let's stay up to date. Get along to pasthorizonspr.com, get along to Stone Pages, and let's see what happens for the rest of 2013. All the best to you. Can I remind you, of course, that there's many new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities from the UK. That's myself, www.bajr.org. And more can always be found at the fabulous Stone Pages website, news.stonepages.com. Well, I'm off for a little lie down until next week. So I hope you enjoyed that, and I'll see you next week. Mm-hmm.